There is the school bell for the Warren County Radio Bible School. We're studying about Jesus in a study of the harmony of the Gospels. And we've come to the story of his transfiguration. Now this is found in both Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Matthew 17, 1 through 8, Mark 9, 2 through 8, and Luke 9, 28 through 36. And we're going to be studying this from the passage in Luke. So you may want to open your Bibles and follow along with us. Luke chapter 9, beginning in verse 28. Now, while you're doing that, I will remind you that the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m., and all are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. Now let me read to you Luke chapter 9 and verse 28, and then we will consult Elam's notes that were written for the Sunday schools of November 23rd, 1924. Now here we are, Luke 9:28. And it came to pass about 8 days after these sayings that he took with him Peter and John and James and went up into the mountain to pray. As on other occasions, Jesus withdrew from the world below and went up into a mountain to pray, to spend the night in prayer. He usually went alone, and this time he took these three. Why did Jesus pray alone? He went out a great while before day to be alone in prayer. He spent whole nights alone in prayer. Why alone? The presence of others would interfere with his perfect communion with his Father. In Gethsemane, he left the eight at the gate, and he left the other three who were with him on the inside and prayed alone. They could not understand and appreciate his prayer. There is the desire to be alone now, to pray in the still, quiet hours of the night when one wishes to pour out the soul unreservedly to God for wisdom and courage, guidance and grace, and yearns to lay hold upon the strong arm of the Almighty One in support in weakness or distress. When all pray with one accord, as they did in Acts 4:24, the case is very different. But when others cannot understand and appreciate the prayer, one prefers to be alone and undisturbed by the presence of others. Sometimes the apostles themselves slept while Jesus prayed. There are numerous examples of Christ praying. His prayers were not empty forms and ceremonies. He realized the need of prayer. He felt the infirmities of his flesh, Hebrews 4:15, and the power of temptation. At every important crisis in his life, much time was spent in prayer. He prayed on the banks of the Jordan when he was baptized. He prayed all night before choosing his apostles. He prayed most of the night just after they sought to make him an earthly king. He prayed in this lesson as the approaching cross cast its shadow over him. And Satan, through Peter again, tempted him. He prayed at the grave of Lazarus. He prayed in the trouble of his soul at Jerusalem, John 12:27-30. He prayed for his disciples in the night in which he was betrayed, John 17. He prayed in the deepest sorrow of Gethsemane. He prayed on the cross for his enemies and murderers. He gave thanks for the loaves and fishes when he fed the multitudes on two occasions. And when he instituted the Lord's Supper, he prayed and blessed the loaf and cup. But these are not all the occasions on which he prayed. In the days of his flesh, he offered up prayers and supplication with strong crying and tears, Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7. since Jesus thus prayed, how much more do we need to pray? If in the midst of all the strife, contention, troubles, and divisions in the church today, and all the disciples of Christ would spend several whole nights in sincere and earnest prayer to God, these things would vanish as a fog before the sun. The peace of God would flow among them as a river. We should pray for all things for which the Bible directs and encourages us to pray. While in everything, we should give thanks. And Matthew chapter 9 and verse 29, we read, or in Luke chapter 9 and verse 29, we read, "And as he was praying, the fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment became white and dazzling." Matthew 17:2 says, "And he was transfigured before them." As he was praying, that is, during his prayer, he was transfigured. Transfigured means to change the form. The original word is transformed, and it's used in such passages as Romans 12 and verse 2 and 2 Corinthians 3 and verse 18 to denote a spiritual change. Jesus was transfigured in the fashion of his countenance was altered, Luke 9:29. His face did shine as the sun, and his garments became white as light and dazzling, Luke 9 and verse 29. And glistening exceeding white, as no fuller on earth can whiten them, Mark 9 and verse 3. Nothing but the purest, whitest, most brilliant, and most glorious objects, snow, light, sun, within our knowledge, could be used to express the brightness of Christ's garments and their radiant glory of his face. The light which shone from his face was around the Saul of Tarsus, was brighter than the sun at the noon, and smote him blind, Acts 9 and verse 3. And then Saul fell to the earth. To John on Patmos it was, "As the sun shineth in his strength, and he fell at the feet of Jesus as one dead," Revelation 1:16 and 17. It shone from the face of Moses when he came down from the mountain, so that he had to put a veil over it when he talked to the people, Exodus 34:29-35. This was but a reflection from Moses' face of the true light. In the beginning, Christ shared this light with God. The Word was with God, and the Word was God, John 1 and verse 1. Jesus was the effulgence of his glory and the very image of his substance, Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 3. This same presence and glory light up the great city of God on high. And the city hath no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine upon it. For the glory of God did lighten it, and the lamp thereof is the Lamb, Revelation 21 and verse 23. Humanity cannot look upon this light without physical pain, blindness, or death. So Jesus veiled this glory in the flesh when he came to earth, that he might sympathize with men and that they might be able to approach him. He was changed, transfigured, then when he came to this earth. Now on the mountain, he appears as he was in the glory with God before he came. This brightness not only shone round about him, but it shone from within him and through his flesh and garments, transforming them into exceeding whiteness and brightness. This is a glimpse, a foretaste of what Christians will be in heaven, who shall fashion anew the body of our humiliation, that it may be conformed unto the body of his glory. Philippians chapter 3 and verse 21. And we know that if he shall be manifested, we shall be like him, for we shall see him even as he is. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 2. From these and other circumstances, it seems plain that in heaven in glorified bodies, Christians will preserve their identity. Now, Moses and Elijah were with Jesus on that night on that mountain. It says in Luke chapter 9 and verse 30, "And behold, there talked with him two men who were Moses and Elijah. From beginning until this angelic appearance ceased, God, through angels or messengers, talked to men on earth." Angel means messenger. Men could not look upon God's face directly and live. Exodus 33:20-33. Moses saw his glory, but not his face. So God sent messengers to talk with him. It is sometimes said that they had seen God because they saw the messengers he sent, but no mortal eyes could stand the brightness of God's face. On this occasion, Moses and Elijah returned from the spirit land and talked with Jesus. Moses was a prophet and the lawgiver to the children of Israel. He was the highest type in the Old Testament of Jesus. When he was grown up, he gave up Egypt, its rich treasures, thrones, and honors, and suffered affliction with the people of God as a slave in order to save them from Egyptian bondage. We read in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, beginning in verse 23 and down through verse 29. "By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a goodly child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, accounting the reproaches of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked into the recompense of reward. By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, that the destroyer of the firstborn should not touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, assaying to do, were swallowed up." Like unto Moses, Jesus gave up the riches and glories of heaven for the poverty of earth. 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 9, "And the form of God, and took the form of a servant, who died on the cross to save the race from sin and the grave. He too was a prophet and lawgiver. He was that prophet of the prophets of whom Moses was a fit type." Moses himself wrote in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 18, beginning in verse 15 and down through verse 22, "Jehovah thy God will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee, of thy brethren, like unto me. Unto him shall ye hearken, according to all that thou desirest of Jehovah thy God in Horeb in the day of the assembly, saying, Let me not hear again the voice of Jehovah my God, neither let me see this great fire any more, that I die not. And Jehovah said unto me, They have well said that which they have spoken. I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto thee. And I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. And it shall come to pass, that whosoever will not hearken to my words which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. But the prophet that shall speak a word presumptuously in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or that shall speak in the name of other gods, that same prophet shall die. And if thou say in thy heart, How shall we know the word which Jehovah hath not spoken? When the prophet speaketh in the name of Jehovah, if the thing follow not, nor come to pass, that is the thing which Jehovah had not spoken. The prophet hath spoken it presumptuously. Thou shalt not be afraid of him." We're going to continue this study in our next class session.